Hello, Dreamers. It's Janine.
And Stephanie.
And welcome to the Course of Course, episode 44.
The Valentine's edition.
Happy Valentine's Day, everyone.
Yay for perfect love.
Yes, for perfect spiritual love. Holy relationship?
Sure, I'll buy that. Oneness, whole and complete.
So happy Valentine's Day, and I hope that everyone has holy relationships in their life.
And with ourself.
It's been a little bit since we've been on mic. We took a little break. When we last spoke, we were getting ready to attend the Jackie Jones and Cindy Renard workshop, and we did, and it was fantastic. So let's talk a little about that so we can let the listeners know how we enjoyed it.
It was delightful. And we had Mikey, he came down from Oregon.
This is Mikey Lemieux, who wrote Dude, Where's My Jesus Fish? We are starting to amass a bit of a community, which I really appreciate. The workshop was fantastic. It was much shorter than the Cindy and Gary workshops we've attended. This was from 2 to 6, so it was about 4 hours. What I loved about it, these two ladies were on fire. I thought they were really on purpose, on message. It was the first time I had been able to listen to Jackie, who I just thought was fantastic. Really appreciated her perspective. I thought she was just natural, just a natural teacher. Obviously, Cindy is fantastic anyway. We've known her for a while. But to have both of those two powerhouse ladies together in this workshop, I was thrilled to be there. I think it was the first time they've ever done it. I would absolutely sign up for another one if they have scheduled one in the future. I'm there. I'll be in the front row.
I will be there too.
So what did you get out of the workshop?
Some of the things I got was they talked a bit about who are we going to watch the movie with, the ego or the Holy Spirit.
When you say movie, what is that referring to?
Our script, our life.
Okay.
And they talked about addiction because they both do counseling and they're very available through Skype. You can email them directly and set up a session with them. And they've been doing it for a while, so they're very practiced.
Yes.
And since Jackie's a broadcaster and has been in front of camera, she's also very confident and very eloquent, and they both know the course so well. It was just really a fresh new energy, I think, and point of view.
Jackie is also the host of the 24th Hour, which is more like a video cast. You can listen to it as a podcast, just the audio, but I think you really do need to get the visual part of it. Regardless, I think that she's fantastic on that. And I agree with you. I think her and Cindy are so well practiced, not just in speaking, but they know the course.
And they're sisters, so there's an automatic bond.
Absolutely. I just felt privileged, I think, being there.
Yes.
It was a slightly different kind of feeling than it usually is with a Gary and Cindy workshop. I appreciated this. It was like two old friends sitting down and just talking, you know, just casually about the course and, you know, their own experiences with it. Jackie did a great job of sort of explaining some of her awakenings, I think, with the course and how it really affected her personal life.
Yes.
And how some of this stuff would just happen, which we all know is magic in the sense that we all start coming awake with the course the more we work with it.
Like hearing voices or seeing lights or getting guidance.
Yeah, absolutely. Or just these interesting synchronicities that occur in our life.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked what she had said, that we really only have two choices. We can look at somebody through the eyes of the Holy Spirit or not. So when we're around people that kind of ping us that may be a little annoying, it's like remembering, how do you want to look at this person? Do you want to look at them through the eyes of the Holy Spirit and forgive them? We're all going to be a little annoying to each other at any given time in our existence, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't we want the same coming back to us? Let's just say we're annoying and maybe moody. Wouldn't we want somebody else to see us through the eyes of the Holy Spirit instead of saying, oh, Janine, what a pain in the neck she is? I'm not saying it's easy, because sometimes we're around people that really, really annoy the heck out of us.
And if we can think of them as shadows in this movie that's already scripted and it's going to happen anyway, but if we can see it through the eyes of the Holy Spirit, then somehow we know they're not separate from us. Because if we deny them or make them wrong, then really we're just making ourselves separate. And it's all about the oneness.
That's one of the exercises I have been working on, is just remembering that it's just a script. It's already done. It's already filmed. What is the point of getting upset about it or angry or nervous or have anxiety? Mm-hmm. It's already done anyway. Mm-hmm. What can you possibly change? Nothing.
But there's that meaning-making machine called the ego that's constantly wanting to keep our mind wrapped around figuring it out and trying to solve the problem and come up with a solution. And there's a million different possibilities. And it's so easy to get lost in that spin cycle.
It absolutely is. I feel like I've talked before, my work environment can be a little dysfunctional, as I think all larger environments can be with people in them, just because there's so much ego play going on. But for me, it's like approaching whatever happens in my daily life to remember, okay, how do I look at the course and apply it here? Because I'm constantly being pinged by things. And sure, I can get annoyed and get mad, but it's not doing me any good. Mm-hmm. It just isn't. So I need to, on a daily basis, just practice this. We all know that those of you who are practicing core students, it's not easy. It's not difficult. I mean, the idea of it is pretty darn simple.
It's remembering.
And when you have these behavior patterns so deeply embedded where somebody you don't like walks up to you, you automatically have these internal bias against them. Like, oh, here he goes again. I also read on the Yahoo discussion group for Disappearance of the Universe, someone was saying, I think it was Marcy. God bless you, Marcy. You've done so much for me and we've never met. So hats off to you. But I think she may have said this, that we tend to live in the past all the time. We approach each other by saying, or at least having our own inner dialogue, oh yeah, he did this to me last week. I don't like him. He's going to do it again.
Uh-huh.
Because we're constantly looking to the past and expecting things to happen according to that. But the reality is the past doesn't exist. It's gone. It's burned. So when you approach somebody, how easy is that really to say, okay, this is the first time I've ever dealt with them. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. We're so used to saying, oh no, that guy, he's such a jerk.
Mm-hmm. And Landmark, they talk a lot about this. This is a big part of the technology in Landmark. And they visualize it with a chair. And you're carrying this chair around. And imagine this chair attached to you. You know, this past is always there. And it's always in our future because it's always with us. And in the now, it's just right there.
Well, okay. So how do you get rid of the chair?
You leave the past in the past and create a new possibility for another kind of future.
And this technology, what do you do to have that happen? Is there like a mantra or is like...
Well, part of it comes through the communication program, which is called the Love Course. And it's very similar to the Course in Miracles.
Except without the Jesus references.
Correct.
Okay. It's like the secular version of the course.
It kind of is. It's like knowing that we constantly are trying to kill people off in our life or make them wrong is just part of that ever meaning making machine.
Kill people off in our life. What do you mean by that?
I don't mean like literally kill them off, but I mean like holding a grudge and never talking to them again. Or it's kind of like holding a grudge, I would say, so that you can't be newly invented in a moment because that past is right there, whether it's a sibling or a husband or a boss or whatever.
So I have a special hate relationship at work with someone. It's a challenge for me. It's a gentleman. And so for me to keep taking myself out of that space and saying, okay, I'm going to look at this person through the eyes of the Holy Spirit, I feel my ego really resisting. Hard. So every time I try, I feel like, oh no, you can't do that. That's not going to work. So for me, it's like, even if I get a few seconds, that's better than nothing.
It builds.
Can't say that it's fun though. I'm not enjoying it.
I have found lately that meditation, my whole thing of 10 minutes for God. I'm so busy. It's like I get home at 8 or 9 or 10 o'clock at night and I don't have any time to make food and I don't want to make food. So maybe I'll have a bowl of cereal. And I'm feeling sick because I'm just so run down. And I just go sit in my meditation chair and I just think, okay, 10 minutes, that's all I need. And I can actually feel completely transformed at the end when I come out. And sometimes it's 20 minutes, sometimes it's an hour, sometimes I fall asleep. Like there's all variables, but just making that effort, I think, is crossing me over the line and having a little bit more muscle in connecting with spirit and being with God. It just makes the outside world a little easier to bear, or like dissipate, because that inside world is building stronger.
Right. And the inside world is the only real world. It's like we exist in this made up world and we are so attached to it, we don't want to let it go.
Yeah, I do think of Alex's virtual reality book and just thinking of it as the hologram and the virtual pinball machine, and we're just all pinging around, and sometimes it seems like we have no control what we're bouncing off of or how we react or respond to what we're bouncing off of, but all we have to do is say none of it is real, and I don't need to figure it out, and I don't need to have a story about it. I've been thinking a lot about stories and the tapes that run in our brain, which is also another thing in Landmark, are the things that we think about ourselves, like I'm not good enough, I don't know, whatever.
I've had that same experience. I've been very creative lately. I created an idea incubator with some people who I work with, but this has nothing to do with work. We meet in the evenings every other week. But my creativity, I feel, is really coming alive now. I've been writing scripts, and then we would have table reads with the incubator, and I'm really getting a lot of juice out of it. But I do find that when somebody reads it and gives me a comment that isn't horrible, but it's not, you know, blowing sunshine up my butt, you know, my immediate reaction is, ugh, maybe I'm not very good. Maybe I don't know what I'm doing. Maybe I'm not funny. And so I went through that for maybe an hour with someone, and I thought, does it really matter? Does it really matter that somebody said something that wasn't even negative? It was just not completely positive. I thought, why are you letting one comment that probably wasn't even meant to be negative affect me? Mm-hmm. And once I got past that, I was like, screw it. I'm writing this because I want to, because it makes me happy and it makes me laugh. Mm-hmm. And it's really been, this has been such a fun experience. And it started helping me reflect back. I'm writing basically some scripts for a comedy show, but it is loosely based on my life experience when I was working in a particular area at a university. And I stopped the other day and I thought, okay, now I need to go through an awful lot of forgiveness here of myself, because, you know, as with everything, stuff happens. And I thought, let me just explore some of the people I used to work with and what they're doing now. And I got to say, I was reading one particular person's current career, and I'm so proud of this person.
Wow.
Really, really proud. And I don't know if I was there like 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I just don't have anything negative at all anymore. I feel like I've kind of released that.
That's wonderful.
It's huge for me.
It's like they can just be, and you can be happy for them.
So happy for them.
You don't have to compare.
Yeah, and I toyed with,
or be jealous.
What if I reach out?
Oh, how about that?
I'm not there yet. I got to be honest, but I didn't really have that thought before, but I think reliving some of my experiences, somebody asked me in my idea incubator, well, this is really fascinating. You must have really enjoyed your time. And the reality is I did. I did for most of it.
Oh, absolutely. It was fun.
It was the funnest job.
I think we should just give them a hint. Like, you worked in a lab, a scientific lab at a university.
Right.
That was all about parapsychology and paranormal stuff, which is pretty fun.
Yes, it was one of the funnest times I think I've ever had, just being paid for. I mean, that doesn't happen very often. And now I'm reliving it, and I just have that joy back again. Like, we always hear, you need to do what you love. And I was doing what I loved. It was the only time in my life so far that I actually can say I was doing what I loved. I didn't get paid very well, so there's that, but it was really a joy. So now I'm writing these scripts based on that experience, and I'm feeling it again. I'm feeling that fun, the joy I had doing it. And now in like this more fantasy world, it's like I'm creating this all over again, but like times 10 of the enjoyment factor.
Right, right.
So it's like what I want to have happen when I rewrite my script backwards.
Oh, neat. I like that.
You know what
that.
I mean? Like, recreate
that.
It in the future.
Yeah.
Or in the present. So it's like there's a lot going on with this. I feel like this is so much more.
It's like healing that past.
Oh, totally. And I think I couldn't have done this before. I think I'm creating it now because I'm ready. And although people in my incubator that are reading it, like a table reads, they have no idea the richness of the background here, but I do. And I hear it kind of come out in the words and the characters. So, you know, I got to say, it's like, I now believe that no matter what we do in our lives, we're giving ourselves our own gifts. We are presenting gifts back to ourselves. And I think this is a huge one for me.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, even if it doesn't get produced, it doesn't matter. But I feel like there's such joy to it and such lightness to it. I feel like it's going to take care of itself. Something's going to happen.
It's like rewriting it, the history.
Yeah, but just focusing on the happiness of it mm-hmm. and the joy and the humor of it, because it is humorous.
And then to the umpth degree.
Correct.
Yeah, it just makes it really fun.
Yeah, it does.
That's cool.
First of all, I created this incubator because I was at work and I thought, I feel like I'm a pretty creative person, but I always felt like my wings were clipped for whatever reason in my current situation at work. And I wanted to express creativity in a different way. And so I created this incubator because honestly, it was a selfish kind of idea. I wanted people around me that could help me pull my creativity out, and hopefully I can help them to pull their creativity out.
Mm-hmm.
So it was not particularly altruistic, but I wanted to have that sense of community, and I have it. And for some reason, these lovely people are just along for the ride and they're letting me do it. I don't know. But it really has been great. We meet every other Tuesday night after work at somebody's house, right? And then we bring food and just kind of hang out for 2 hours and do nothing but talk about our creative endeavors and discuss how we can help each other manifest them. Everybody has great creative ideas,
mm-hmm.
but not everybody can make them happen.
Mm-hmm.
They can't, as you would say, they can't necessarily land them. So we're helping each other land our stuff.
That's a wonderful support system.
It really is. So I'm hoping this can continue on. And I thought after we're done with our first year of being the incubator, I wouldn't mind writing something up and maybe helping other people do with them. This is such an easy idea. You just get a bunch of people together. You have to have some sort of commitment. I think what keeps us going every other week is we all just generally like each other and it's just nice to kind of hang out socially. But because we trust each other so much, it's like, okay, let's just, we say this dialogue of, oh, that's a great idea. Let's bring it to the incubator. Like all of a sudden it's this thing, like the star chamber. Like, let's just go to the incubator and we'll discuss it.
Yeah, it's good because if people have an idea, but they don't know how to manifest it, you guys can all brainstorm it together and mm-hmm. then they can walk away and have some homework to do. And then they can come back the next week and then you guys can take it to the next level.
And sometimes it's not really to manifest anything. It's to just kind of talk through it. So we had somebody who wanted to purchase and operate a food truck. It's like, oh, that's great. So we started talking about it. And after talking about it, he's like, yeah, you know what? I don't think I want to do it now. So it's okay if we have these ideas that don't land. It's mm-hmm. just nice to talk them through.
Definitely.
And kind of let the energy go. We were talking about Elizabeth Gilbert's book. And what was it called? Big Creative?
Creating Magic? Big Magic?
Big Magic. And she was discussing how ideas are just all around us. There's no like one particular idea that you own. They kind of just flirt around to different people. If you're not ready to land them, they'll just go to somebody else, which is why you see sometimes people will sue each other because, hey, that was my idea.
Yeah.
You should do that. But the reality is they're just
the idea
possible.
Wanted to come through.
Correct. And it was just waiting for somebody to bring it down. So just because you have an idea doesn't necessarily mean somebody else doesn't have that idea at the same time.
It's neat stuff.
It really is neat stuff.
We used to have that mastermind group a long time ago where we used to meet at Barnett's house. And
you know what I think about that one? Because I was with you in those. I didn't think they did anything. I felt like it was a lot of talk. I didn't see that anything was actually manifesting.
Yeah. I mean, it was a meditation group. And it was like some of them were into heart math and they were into some different kinds of technology. Nobody there was into the course. Everyone was into Landmark, pretty much everybody. There's a lot of training in Landmark about how to manifest. So we had that going into it. At least some of us did.
I didn't feel like that group was really congealed. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a bunch of disparate people who were there. But I didn't necessarily feel like there was a common goal.
Well, I think they shot Celestine Prophecy during that time. And they had just finished What Dreams May Come, and Conversations with God was coming out. Like
Of them did, but I don't know if the group in general were really participating in that part of it.
Yeah, I mean, there were some people, mm-hmm. but not every, like you said, not everybody in a group is actually
right.
creating and manifesting,
right.
but some people were.
Right. Whatever happened to that group?
Oh, I think it probably dissipated.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, some things happen. Everything's organic, right? So it's created and it lives out its usefulness for whatever
cycle.
Reason. Yeah, and then it just dissipates and then something else happens, you mm-hmm. know, that kind of thing. It really, I think, depends on the core people who are organizing it and running it. And it's not that easy when you have people. For this one, we were going to their house, which is fine, but it's hard, I think, to get people from all over LA, at least, to get there after work. I'm lucky in mine that we basically chose a place that was very close to all of our work.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a lot easier to get to. I mean, mechanics have to come into play too.
Definitely. So I've been playing a lot with self-hatred.
Oh, let's talk about that.
And connecting it to the unconscious guilt. And I've been sick a little bit, like a head cold, eyes, ears, nose, whatever. And I just think like maybe somehow I'm draining out the unconscious guilt. But, you know, the stories and the tapes that run me. You know, sometimes it's something like, I hate my body. You know, like, I think I look great in clothes, but if I was naked in front of a man and we were about to have sex, I don't think I like my abs so much. And I don't think I'd want them to see them. Superficial. The fact that there isn't a person in my life, and it's Valentine's Day or whatever, like the little meaning-making machine is, well, if you were really cute, then you'd probably have a boyfriend and you'd probably be having a Valentine's Day or I don't know. I really don't care about Valentine's Day, truly. Those stories and that self-hatred that's constantly there, I'm just trying to clear all that stuff out.
I talked to you earlier today about this, but I've had many, many relationships. I just have.
Mm-hmm.
And the current one I have, I feel like I'm so blessed. I would never have said this 10 years ago looking at my current relationship because it's not conventional. This is not a, I love you, you're so great, we should be together forever. It is not that at all. But I gotta say, it's the best one I've ever had. Because we're not lost in the whole, you know, special love stuff of this facade of two people. Oh, I can't live without you. The reality is we're very happy with who we are individually. And mm-hmm. we're not really expecting anything from each other. And it makes it so much better. But I fought that. I mean, early in our relationship, I was having some problems because I just kept projecting on him, like, how dare he? Why isn't he a better boyfriend? Why isn't he doing this? It was all me. It was all my messed up stuff.
Society's ideas of how it's supposed to go, what yeah. it's supposed to look like.
You know, he's not a core student. He's not really spiritual at all, but he doesn't have to be. I think I've changed and my relationship with him is reflected by the fact that I've changed.
That you can have some peace and be with it not looking like a air quote, normal relationship.
A conventional relationship. I'm searching for a conventional relationship.
I mean, you don't live together, so that definitely right. helps.
But I no longer have the need for validation that mm-hmm. he cares about me. I know he does. It's not necessary.
Good.
And he knows I do. Yeah. It's the most bizarre relationship. But I got to say, it feels so much more pure.
I feel like caring is a strong energy. Like when you care for someone, it's a form of love.
We are bonded. I think we're very, very close friends.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever his stuff is with his previous relationship, I think is a block for him. I don't have that, but I also don't have the need anymore to care mm-hmm. whether he's spending too much time talking about her or whatever. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm freer now to just say, hey, you need to stop talking about your ex. She may be crazy. I don't know, but I don't need to hear it all the time.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just, it feels better to me instead of the old way of doing it where I'd get mad and angry and he would have no idea.
Right.
Like, why is she upset? Because I didn't feel like I had the right or the ability to communicate why I was upset.
Uh-huh.
I just knew that he wasn't giving me enough attention. He should give me all the attention. I'm the woman in his life. Why doesn't he pay attention to me more? No, it's like it's different. And I feel like one of the victories in the Janine lifetime really is that it is finally getting past the whole special romantic love stuff that I was so entrenched in most of my adult life. Because I've had so many relationships. And it's funny, I would used to say, oh, men, they're terrible. They only want one thing. Mm. I don't feel like that anymore at all. It's just we're all in it together. Mm. We are all the same person.
Yes. I feel like I've always loved men, or at least since I did all my man classes. in the 2000s. But I've kind of been thinking like, okay, so I don't have a relationship, which is perfectly fine. Maybe this lifetime is more about just being okay with being who I am and being by myself. I don't feel alone. I'm totally fine being by myself. I have my own little thing going. The course is everything to me. It is my life. I try and spend as much time as I can drilling it into my ego to undo the mind. So I listen to the course a lot. And this morning I was doing my pancakes and listening to the audio. And I was hearing about justice and being unjust with each other and injustice. And I know that's been a theme for us. And this is in chapter 25. And Justin Scalia just passed, Justice Scalia, and it's like, oh, the Supreme Court, and next year there's going to be at least 3 people that the new president will have to put in. So we're going to have, because they predict that 3 people on the Supreme Courts will pass or retire in the next 4 years of whoever's president. So the fact that someone just passed, that's the 4th person. When you've only got 8 people, right? Or is there 9 people?
There's 9.
Then that's a pretty significant amount of people. The Holy Spirit can use all that you give him for your salvation, but he cannot use what you withhold.
He cannot use what you withhold.
So to me, that's part of that forgiveness thing. Like, we just have to keep turning it over. And when we hold back stuff, it's because we think we're trying to figure it out. That's the ego part of us. And it says, you know, like, if you gave it over or thought that you gave it over, for if you did, you would believe that he took it from you, that he wrestled it from you against your will. And you would not learn that it's your will to be without it. The special function. Oh, yeah. The Holy Spirit's gift, if it was given specially to an elect and special group, and kept apart from others as less deserving, then he is an ally to that specialness. Everyone is entitled to the gift of healing and the deliverance and peace. To give a problem to the Holy Spirit is to solve your means that you want it solved. You know, I think that part of those stories and those tapes that keep running me is because I'm trying to solve them. I'm trying to figure them out. Like, I'm just constantly, my mind is going and it's like, I don't want to get caught up in this anymore. Just take it away. You know, that whole Calgon, take me away. So thank goodness for when I can get home and just kind of barf it all up and give it back to the Holy Spirit.
It's why I love weekends and why I really am not somebody who likes to be at parties all the time or socializing. Mm-hmm. I like being on my own. I think during the week, I'm surrounded by a little too many opportunities for me to give it over to the Holy Spirit. Mm. It can be draining. So when I'm home, it helps me to kind of reconnect and not go through these deep-seated behavior patterns of automatically casting judgment on someone. It happens so effortlessly to me. If I'm around somebody I don't necessarily like, I jump right into, oh, what a jerk. He does this all the time, that whole reliving the past. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like, from a course perspective, we need to understand that every moment is brand new, that everybody can reinvent themselves in the present, and to stop bringing in their past or your perception of their past into the present.
In the now.
In the now.
In the moment.
Well, it's kind of like the forgiveness. Hear this about relationships. You need to be in the present, and you need to make sure that your relationship flourishes in the present and not bring all these past hurts and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great on paper. There's a lot of this counseling stuff that is fantastic on paper, but to practice it is a whole different thing. To approach everyone as though you're meeting them for the first time or you're appreciating them for the first time. It is a muscle that you have to practice over and over again, especially in special relationships.
Yeah, it says here, like, unless you think that all your brothers have an equal right to miracles with you, you will not claim your right to them because you were just unjust with one. And then it says, like, if you seek to deny, you will feel denied. If you seek to deprive, then you have been deprived. A miracle can never be received because another could not receive it. Not only forgiveness offers miracles, and pardon must be just to everyone.
And that goes back to the one mind. We're all one mind. Mm-hmm. We have split so many times from the original one tiny mad idea that we have to remember that. If we don't like somebody, it's just an aspect of ourselves we don't like. It's just being reflected by somebody else. So once we really get that we're all in it together, which isn't that easy when we're looking at ourselves in a not particularly great light.
Yeah, and then when it's like, this is my point of view, this is my dream, I dreamed up everything and everyone and every world and the whole Son of God, and then you did, and he did, and she did. I mean, it's just like grandiose. It's almost like a meltdown. But really, when none of it is real, and we're just shadows of us and our unconscious guilt just playing out, and in that moment we can just let that illusion go and ask the Holy Spirit to take it back. And we have to. That's the active part of the true forgiveness, is asking to connect with the Holy Spirit and to kind of wash it away and let it be absolved, and that there never was a sin.
I think that's part of what Jesus was saying, that we need to always be diligent in our practice.
Mm-hmm.
It's the constant remembering. It's very easy to forget. I think mm-hmm. we're all about forgetting.
Mm-hmm. That's what the ego wants us to, because right. it keeps us tied up in all these other things, like I'm too fat, or I'm not getting enough sleep, or I'm feeling run down, or that person made me feel icky. Or
I feel like it's very easy for me to say, oh yeah, that's their ego, but not as easy for me to remember it's mine.
That's why I think that part of this lifetime is about this self, like this self getting that there is nothing else out there, and there is nothing to fear. There is only love. There is no shadow. There is no duality. There is just perfect love in that oneness. And how trippy it would be to be totally like aware, like a Yogananda or an Artin or a Persa or
absolutely.
Something, and still be here. But that's my goal.
That's my goal too. We have shared goals. Well, before we end this podcast, I do want to talk briefly about the current election cycle mm-hmm. that the United States is in right now. We have candidates that have had a number of debates, and I'm feeling like I'm pretty disassociated with the whole political stuff, but I do find it fascinating. And talk about being able to point and say, oh, that's ego. I think I'm watching massive ego on a television set.
For sure.
Which makes sense. I mean, the reality is we all have our preferences politically. We may be more conservative-leaning or progressive-leaning, whatever. I find that all of the candidates, regardless of what party, are very ego-minded. They're very ego-driven. And so I can tend to get a little too ego-invested in them. It's sort of like watching a sports team and you're like rooting for your favorite, mm-hmm. your home team. So I'm watching this, and one side, I will disclose that I used to be very much a Republican. I came from a Republican area of the country. My family is very Republican, very conservative. I'm not that anymore, but I do understand the mindset mm-hmm. of the Republican Party of the United States. But now I find it humorous, because I think of the two parties in their debates, the Republican one is so much more fascinating because it is massive ego. And it's also very childish in the egoness. Because it's very much, I hate you, no, you. It's like all these ridiculous ad hominem attacks at each other.
Mm-hmm.
That are, it feels like I'm watching a grade school argument on the playground. But these are adult males, which I also find fascinating, trying to get the nomination to be president of the United States. And yet these are people I probably wouldn't even want to hang out with, much less have them run the country. But watching it, I'm like, oh, they're dumb, they're this, they're that. It's like my ego getting invested.
Totally.
You know? So I think it's fascinating during an election cycle in this country, and I think the United States is no different than any other country on the planet, where we're full of a bunch of people who say, oh, they don't know what they're talking about. We're very judgmental, you know? But this year, I think it kind of heats up a lot. So people, their egos are already, you know, in control of them. And now their egos are fighting the other egos because they want this thing or that thing. It is watching it play out on a grand scale.
Speaking of watching, HBO, was it HBO or Showtime? It's Showtime.
It's Showtime.
That
watched
has
it.
The circus.
It's called the circus.
I stumbled upon it.
So did I. After you told me, I watched The Big Mo.
And it was incredible. following the candidates. And it's all the way through getting to the White House. So for this whole calendar year, every week they're doing a very up-to-date documentary of what's happening in our politics.
So the filmmakers are following these candidates.
Two journalists.
Mm-hmm. It really is
And
good.
A consultant. So there's three people that they're following.
Yeah. So everyone, it's on Showtime. It's called The Circus. It's fascinating. Like, I don't think you have to watch any debates or anything. You just get it from this show.
Yeah.
But I like how they're doing it. I think it's nice that it's revealing the way it is. And it's also interesting because they show, like, video clips of the candidates you don't really see.
Right.
There was one on the Big Mo episode where they were in New Hampshire. And the filmmakers were catching Mark Rubio outside of the hotel throwing snowballs with his kids. Uh-huh. It's like you wouldn't see that anywhere else.
Yeah, the human side.
The human side of it. Exactly.
There's a part of me that relates with Hillary a lot because she is clearly the most qualified. And I feel like I've been there before, mm-hmm. where I've done all my homework, I've done all the procedures and took all the classes, and I've done everything perfect the way it should be done. I'm clearly the best candidate for this. They should see that. They should hire me, you know? And yet, even though she's done all that, what's in her face is feel the burn.
Correct.
Socialism. At least that's what the right side is saying. And it's just, I don't know. It's just a crazy time right now.
No, I'm with you. I can feel these issues that are deep-seated with me kind of like playing out with Hillary. And I want to be like, it's okay. You deserve to win.
Saturday Night Live last night, the opening skit with Kate McKinnon, she was Hillary. And these couples were having like a Valentine's dance. And she was singing this love ballad to them. Like, you really do love me, don't you? It was hysterical.
I should watch that. Well, regardless of who gets, you know, the
nomination. We have a long time to go.
Right, for each party. I do feel grateful that I'm through another election cycle, that I can watch this play out. It's good theater.
Yes.
And I appreciate it. You know, I definitely have had kind of a soft spot for Hillary for a while. I certainly backed her 4 years ago, leading up to the nomination. Barack Obama got it. And, you know, I became a supporter, but really my heart was with Hillary. And I think it certainly is this time as well.
When I lived in D.C. and did massage therapy on Capitol Hill, and her and Bill had just gotten into office, and she was trying to get health care out there. And they created this whole travel gate thing to take the focus off of her trying to get health care for all. And living in D.C. at that time, it was just another crazy time in how they painted the Clintons out to be.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Just the story. It just keeps going.
Yeah, it just never changes, right? It's like the only thing that can
spinning.
Change is us just be like, okay, it's an interesting little entertainment factor.
Yeah, because it's weird because there is a part of me that wants to separate myself, that wants to say, okay, you're the outside world and I'm going to cut you off and I'm not going to let you in. I'm going to have my own inner world. But that's separation.
Yeah. It is fascinating how much we are experiencing separation every moment. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if we're lucky, we will take a few moments to step outside of it and go, oh, right, I was, you know, this is separation and it's really one whole. And then you slide back into, you know, the
just
judgment.
The ego
and
trying
the ego.
To, it's a constant opportunity.
That it is. Well, that takes us to the end of this podcast. Mm-hmm. Another opportunity for us to talk about the course.
Mm.
I want to thank everyone and have a fantastic Valentine's Day.
May we be perfect love.
Right. Every day should be Valentine's Day, shouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
We should have 365 days of loving each other.
Of just being love.
Exactly. And on that note, thank you very much, everyone. Have a good evening. We will be back in a couple weeks for the next episode of The Course of Course.
Good night.
Good night.